The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader. Want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, 13th day of July, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 183 points, the S&P up 18, the comp up 33, gold up $25, and crude up 65 cents. So we're green across the board. Good afternoon, Michael. Good afternoon, Michael. Michael's not there. We'll stand by for Michael. He's going to get right into the recap today. We have a special guest that's going to be on the show, Mr. James Catulus, and I do hope I pronounced that correct. He's the co-founder and lead attorney of the CCC. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
I am
now here. You are. Okay, very good.
Yes.
All right. So coming up at 12:45 Eastern, we'll be talking to James. Again, he's co-founder and lead attorney of the CCC. He represents 8,000 customers of MF Global. And I know that many of you in our listening audience were clients of MF Global. And some of you now are clients of PFG Best. In fact, I got an email this morning from one of our CFRN partners and a listener who said, I not only was a client of the biggest, one of the biggest, MF Global, I thought I was hedging things very well by also being a client of one of the smallest, PFG, He says, and I got stung in both directions. So that's really why we're having James on the show today, to just kind of talk about what's going on, what traders and investors can do to protect themselves, and what he and his organization are doing to help the clients of MF Global and potentially PFG Best as well. So with that, Michael, I will point out for those of you that were in the live trading room with us this morning, we took a long trade right here. This was just our very standard textbook entry, looking for a humble two-point advance. We went sideways, and we got, I think, was it a point and a half, a point and three quarters?
Point and three quarters is what it popped up to.
Yeah, then it drew back down. And for those of you that stuck it out, the tape tells the story. It finally made its 2 points. Now, that was an investment-grade trade because
if you go check your mailbox right now, I think you'll find a statement in there that already has that on it.
Yeah, that was just unusual. But here's the thing. The market had expended a tremendous amount of energy running up, what was it, 16 points off this low?
Yep, 16, yep. 16 from the open.
There was a beautiful pullback entry right here, which we would have taken, aside from the fact that it was running right into a weekly trading zone. So at that point, you have to use your own discretion. You know, do I or don't I? That pullback, there was a doji, and then a nice run. That one just took off. You could have been done for the day and out doing whatever it is traders do when they get done.
And, you know, it's worth noting that when there's a doji on a pullback like that to the BBC, that, I mean, there's another one. Both of those trades had a doji right at the BBC.
Yeah.
When there's a doji at the BBC on one of those trades like that, that often results in good things. As a matter of fact, if you even look over there at about 10:28, something like that, there's a doji over there at the BBC. Right in there, yep.
Right there.
Right there. Another doji at the BBC.
No,
that was the second dip below the BBC. I'll go over all this when I have the charts.
Okay, I commented this morning that on this pullback right here, let's see if I can get a vertical line going on. Yeah. On this pullback right here, this pullback entry, my bias and my cycle were both bearish. Okay. But aside from that, because we're in the live trading room and in a teaching environment, we wanted to put that trade on to show you how it works. And so we did. And the outcome was long coming, but ultimately it did give us the 2 points we were looking for. But the interesting thing to note is, where did it actually make its move finally? And that would be over here. As you can see, once we had the green light down here, it was finally able to go ahead and get the job done. So, it was a big day. Now, last night after the partners meeting, I needed to reboot the flight deck here. No sooner did I shut everything down, and I'm sitting in this cone of silence, no computer, nothing going, no monitors, no fans whirring. And my phone goes off with the signal. Did you get the signal on your phone last night?
You know what? I didn't get the signal on my phone.
Let me tell you exactly what time I got the signal.
Let me look at my phone. I'm pretty upset about that.
I got the signal at 1:21 a.m. Eastern.
Let me look. I have...
And the signal said be long above 1335.
Yep. I did get it.
And
but my phone at 1:21.
Guys, I'm not gonna make any excuses or anything, but had my system not been down for maintenance, we would have put out a signal right here to be long the market above 1335. Actually, that signal would have been more like here. But we didn't. Okay, so let me just make it clear. Over here, we actually put these out. This one did not go out. So, it is what it is. With that, Michael, because we do have a special guest, and we want to get through the recap, and we want to get David on before our guest shows up at 12:45 Eastern, let me go ahead and just give you the mic and give you the screens and let you take care of the recap. And to those of you who are visiting us for the first time today, welcome. Glad to have you with us. We do this every day, Monday through Friday, from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern. We hope you'll join us again.
Okay, let me grab everything right now, and I will get through the recap. All right. Where to start? Well, you know what? I'm not starting anywhere just yet. Dwayne, I was just going to tell you that I don't know if it's just me, and maybe somebody else in the audience can confirm for me, but I thought Dwayne's audio was going in and out a little bit.
Well, perhaps it was. I don't know.
I just want it, because I know we don't want that to happen in a few minutes here.
Unfortunately, at this stage of the game, there's not anything I can do about it.
Okay. Sounds good to all you guys. All right. Oh. It could have been me then. Could have been me. That's why I had to ask. Good.
What's the peanut gallery response? Sounded good to me. Sounds okay here. Okay. Thanks, guys. Boy, you made me feel so much better.
That's good. All right. Maybe my hearing is failing me. All right, we're going to start the recording right here. When that little circle goes away, there it is. All right, guys, today is Friday the 13th. It is the 13th of July, 2012. We're going to go over the trades that we took in the live trading room, the trades we didn't take, the investments we made, all those sorts of things. Now, before I go any further, let me mention that we did something a little bit different this morning in the live trading room based on stuff that we did in the partners meeting last night. Okay, I'm going to go over that, and I may even go over what we covered in the partners meeting last night. If you have not taken a free trial with us, then you should go to www.cfrn.net/apply and sign up for the free trial. It really is free. There's no credit card required, none of that stuff. In the free trial, you get 5 days in the live trading room, 2 hours per day for 5 days, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Okay. With that, you get all the indicators, all the data feeds, everything you see here. All right. It's a really simple process, and it's all good. If you are on a free trial and your trial is about to expire, you need to get in touch with me and let me know if you want to continue. Okay. I believe everyone whose trial is about to expire, I've sent an email to. You may or may not have gotten it. It may have gone into your spam folder. But just to cover everyone, if you're on a free trial and you want to continue, send an email to support@cfrn.net and let me know. All right. You can also call me. My phone number is all over the place. You can do that as well. All right. Now, that said, We had a good partners meeting last night, as they usually are. And one of the things that I was showing in the partners meeting was how to use a slingshot to trade the crude oil without looking at price. All right. Now, let me do this a little bit for you. All right. I'm going to cover the crude oil first, but I want to go back to what we showed in the partners meeting last night. Okay. You see this right here. Three-step direction to do it. Okay. You can see that. That's on the recording right now. All those arrows that you see right there are arrows that were drawn just looking at the slingshot, not looking at price. All right. I covered the whole day yesterday with it. We didn't have that many opportunities today. Of the opportunities that we had, they all worked or had break-even. But right here, I'm just going to show you when you have a strong sloping cycle, and the green line diverges from the direction of the cycle, but more importantly, moves above the brown line, and then closes down in the same direction as the cycle is going. That's an opportunity right there. Now, doing this, I did all these arrows without looking at price, and everybody in the partners meeting last night saw me do it. And there it is, right there, an opportunity to short. Okay. I'm only going to cover a couple of these right here. You see we had the same thing, brown lines on the other side of the upsloping cycle. We have the green line going against it all, and then going back toward it all. All right. And obviously you can see that that is going to be an up move. There you go. Okay. Now, when you're doing this, you're not looking at anything on the price chart. Okay, on the price panel. You're not looking at anything up there. So, I mean, I showed everybody this last night, and you know, I'm not going to go through every one of these right now, but I showed everyone in the partners meeting last night all these things, and I don't know how many there were here. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. We'll say this right here was right at the end of the day. We'll say 16. This was close enough to the end of the day. One of those was a losing trade. I think it was one of these right over here, actually. One was a losing trade. One or two only made about four ticks profit, which on the crude oil, by the way, is $40 a contract. And the rest of them made more, which is saying more. You know, usually 8 to 10 ticks. All right, so let's get into today. All right, I'm just going to scroll through here on the same, looking at the same indicator. This was a little earlier on in the morning right here, but this is a pretty good idea of what to look for. All right, you see right here we have a strong sloping line right there. There's two of them. One is this one right here. Oops. That arrow ended up pointing in the wrong spot. Right there, when the green line closed down like that, and again right here when the green line closed down, the brown line is below the red, and that closed down and that closed down. Now, I'm not looking at price. You guys can see this. I don't know what it did. That was pre-market, but I'm guessing that that was a pretty good opportunity to get short right in here. Right here is where you would have shorted the first one, and right here is where you would have shorted the second one. The first one from the entry, let's say you entered at market, 87.16 is where the close of that bar was. We'll give you two ticks for the market entry. Even three ticks, 87.13. It dropped down to 87.05, which is $80, or the equivalent of 1.75 points before it pulled back up. $80 a contract, all right? And that was just in a couple of seconds. This one, well, probably a couple of minutes at that time. The next one, the entry, will say 87.03. Let's say you enter in at 87 even. We'll give you a few ticks for slip, okay? That one dropped from 87. Down to 86.81 for $190 a contract. And that one was in 2 minutes or so. All right, that's what we're looking at. That's what I showed the partners in the meeting last night. This morning, we took this trade right here, brown below a strong sloping cycle. Green moved away from it all and then moved back into it. I shorted right here. And right here, and I actually only took 5 ticks profit. It gave more than 5, but I only took 5 because I moved my stop to +5 once it had started to really move. Okay, and the next one right here, on this one, it went right here, and when it moved to about +5 ticks, I moved my stop to break even, and I ended up getting out over here at break even. Okay, right in here on this bar right here, I think I ended up getting a break even on that one. All right, I just wanted to go over that quickly, okay? Now, as the morning went on, I took this short right here. This was a regular bullish divergence touch of the BBC with an up close. I took that, I'm sorry, not a short, it was a long. I took that long right there, and I lost 8 ticks on that. I followed that up right here with a long trade, and I made 16 ticks on this. This had a bullish cross, a test of the BBC, and an up close, and it moved up. 16 ticks right there. I took 16 ticks profit on that. I missed that trade, and I don't think I took any more trades on crude in the morning. All right, there were a couple more opportunities, but the crude really got kind of right in here. It was really messy. Okay, there was this opportunity right here, and then nothing down here was saying we should go long or short until we got over here where it was, you know, 11:09. That suggested a short. But at that point, on a Friday to the 13th, I was just thinking, you know what? I'm green. I'm just going to stay that way. You can see right here, there was another opportunity. Bullish divergence right in here. Here's, we had tested the BBC. The bullish divergence was right here. All right, so you look for the up close, and you take some profit on it. It did it again right in here. This was during the break. Didn't really have much to go right in here. But the bullish divergence was right here. All right, so up it went. That was crude this morning. Okay, so did I go over it? Did I go over the results yet? We are up 5 ticks on crude, 4 ticks on the ES, and 4 ticks on the NQ. All right, 5 ticks on crude, 4 ticks on the ES, and 4 ticks on the NQ. Let's move on to the next one, the ES. Now, this was the investment. All right, that we talked about, that Dwayne had just mentioned. Now, I didn't take this first trade right here because it was going into the weekly trading zone. I didn't have 2 points from where I would have had my entry to the zone. It's just in my trading plan not to do that, and I didn't. I had a feeling, I had a pretty strong feeling that it was going to make it, but it's just in my trading plan not to do it, so I followed my plan. Okay? You can see right here, when the entry actually happened, we had some good bullish divergence right here on the slingshot. And at that point, what you anticipate is this green line working its way up into the cycle. Okay? When you have this kind of divergence, either the green line is going to work its way into the cycle or the cycle is going to work its way into the green line. That's just what happens. Right? Now, in the next case, we actually took this trade. We went long here at 13:45 even. This trade took a very long time for me, a very, very long time. It went down as far as, it drew down as far as a point while the cycle portion of the slingshot was working its way down to the green line. Now, the fact that it did that without dropping more than a point suggested to me that it was going to move up from there. All right? It did move up from there. It moved up a little bit. It moved up about 5 or 6 ticks in here. Once it moved up 6 ticks, I moved my stop up to +1 point. Once it moved up to +1 point, I moved my stop to break even. But once it moved to +6 ticks, I moved my stop to +1 point, which was right in here. All right, that took me out at +1 point. Oops, hang on. Bring my DOM over. There you can see. +1 point there. Here's the +5 ticks on the crude. I'll show you the +4 ticks on the NQ. All right, that was it right there. That was my trade of the morning. Now, Dwayne stuck it out the whole time. He stuck it out. After putting in this bottom right here, I mean, you could have pretty much reduced your risk. You didn't have to have 8 ticks risk on that anymore. Maybe 5 ticks would have been enough, because if it drops below this level, it was going to go down to the zone, and it would have stopped you out anyway. Fortunately, it didn't go down below that level. It went down near that level, and it started to move back up. All right? Now, right here, and this is significant. This is what Dwayne mentioned a few minutes ago. This is 11:30 when the European markets closed. Okay, we also close our live trading room in the morning, but right there at 11:30 is when the European markets closed, and that's when it made its move up. Right there is when it made its move up. It finally went up beyond 1.75 points to the 2-point target up here at 47. Alright, and then it went beyond that. So if you entered here, you had 2 points there. If you entered here, you had an opportunity to take 1 point with me right here. And if you entered again when it pulled back again right here, or right over here, but this is the actual setup right here, you had an opportunity to take another 2 points right there. Okay? That was the ES on the morning. All right. Now the YM. I didn't take any trades on the YM this morning, but 4 of them set up. I'll cover them. I know I had outlined them. Anyway, there were four trades that set up this morning after the open. All right, there was one right here at 9:32. Let me just make sure. No, that's yesterday. That's why I don't have them outlined. There we go. Did I move too fast? Anyway, there were four opportunities to trade the YM this morning. One was right in here. Okay. We had bearish divergence, a test of the BBC with a down close. That was one spot. There was another one right in there. Test of the BBC with a down close with some bearish divergence. That one didn't go very far, but at least it went somewhere. The next opportunity was right here. Again, on the short side, a test of the BBC with a down close with a bearish divergence. All right, and the next opportunity after that was on the long side. We had right over here, we had a test of the BBC. We had a test of the BBC. After getting a bullish cross at the MA1 over the BBC right here, the price came back down, tested the BBC, and gave an up close with the bullish divergence. All right, when I talk about the bullish divergence, what I'm talking about is the cycle portion of the slingshot being bullish, you know, being oversold, and the green line portion of the slingshot pulling away from it and then moving back up into it. Okay, that was pretty much it. There was another one right here, but 1, 2, 3, 4. We got into the afternoons, not the whole afternoon. Okay, there were five of them. Right there was the last opportunity on the YM. I didn't trade the YM at all this morning, though. You see, we had the bullish divergence right here. Okay, I guess the last time I counted this morning, there were four. Now there's six. Or eight. Six. We had in this one right here, we had the MA1 cross down below the BBC. Price pulled back up and tested the BBC. And at the time, we had the bearish divergence on the slingshot. All right, so you would have looked for the down close. That one didn't go too far. The next one was over here. Once we had the bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close with the bullish divergence. So you would have been looking for the up close and gotten long right in there for the ride up. All right, right now, we have bearish divergence, and it's tested the BBC right there and given a down close. So the spot to short that would be right there at 12,684. Okay, that's already given four ticks profit. And that was the YM. So I covered everything but the NQ so far. Let me just cover the NQ. And I'll wrap up my recording here. Okay. I didn't take many trades on the NQ this morning. What I wanted to point out was the NQ had the same type of setup that I went over in the partners meeting last night. I'll show you right here. There were two of them this morning, right at the open. One was right here. You see the brown is below the cycle portion of the slingshot. The brown is below that. The green turned back into the slingshot, and then it diverged from it. Okay, it diverged from the actual direction of the cycle. It started to, and then it turned back into the direction of the cycle right here. That would have been the spot to short. It would have been right there. Okay. And that went 8 to 10 ticks. The next one was right here, the same thing, just in the opposite direction. You see the brown is now above the cycle portion of the slingshot, and the green line came against the brown and the cycle, and then turned back into it. All right, so the spot to get long on that was right there. Then we had just a regular normal test of the BBC with an up close with a bullish divergence right here. Okay, spot to get long on that was right there. The next trade was right here. We had bullish divergence, another test to the BBC with an up close. I got long right there, and I took a break even right there. There it is. Over here, I got short right here. We had bearish divergence with the green line pulling away from the cycle portion, right? The MA1 moved below the BBC. Price pulled back up to the BBC and tested it and gave a down close. The price to short was right there, and that is where I shorted right there. Okay, I took some profit right down there. There was another opportunity in there, and there were bunches of opportunities in here on the NQ during the morning. All right, here was another one, and there was another one. All the same stuff. We went into the break right here, but here was during the break right there. All right, there's the long trade. Here's another one. This one wasn't as good because the cycle was red and started to turn down. About right there. All right, and that's pretty much it. All right, the YM trade that I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, right now is sitting right about break even. All right, but you had your bearish cross, you tested the BBC with a down close, it gave 4 ticks profit, and then it came back up to break even. What you would anticipate with this is this green line right here turning over and coming down, working its way into the cycle portion of the slingshot. Okay. Nick says, seems like you were wanting to counter trend trade this huge move today on the YM. No, I'm not wanting to counter trend necessarily. Not in the time frame I'm working in. All right, all the trades I take, almost all the trades I take are trend trades. I do realize that we had a big move up on the YM, and there were plenty of trend trades on the way up. One right there, one right there, one right there, one right there. There were also opportunities on the way down before we realized that it was going to be a huge move up. Okay. What I trade is what's in front of me. So that's pretty much it. All right. If anybody else has any other questions, just type them in and I'll answer them. If not, then you can send any questions to support@cfrn.net, and either Dwayne or myself will get back to you on that. And I'm going to wrap up the recording here because I know we've got to get out to Vegas, and then we have a special guest coming on in a few minutes. All right?
Very good.
All right, Dwayne. It's all wrapped up.
Thank you very much, Michael. And yes, guys, we are going to go to Vegas right now. Check in with Mr. David Williams at pagetrader.com. And then we have our special guest coming on to talk to us about the MF Global meltdown, the PFG best blow up, and two very different situations. And I'll let James get into that when he comes on. One was a trade gone bad, and the other appears to simply be a man gone bad. But James will be able to give us a little more insight into what really went on with both of those issues, and what steps are being taken to make investors and traders whole after this rather horrific situation. So we'll pause now for station identification. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning, sir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure being here. I'm looking forward to listening to the guest today and maybe asking some questions myself. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
So here we are. The name of your guest, Dwayne, today is?
James Catullus, if I have pronounced that correctly.
Okay. Beautiful.
He is the MF Global client attorney. He represents about 8,000 MF Global customers. And I was just noticing on his website that his organization, Commodity Customer Coalition, is also going to do all that they can to help the customers of PFG Best. When I originally wrote the blog post last night, I wasn't 100% certain on that, but I see now that it is right there on his website. So we'll get some information. And this guy, I've read a lot of articles about him. He's been written up in Forbes and CNN and you name it. And he's a busy guy. I mean, this guy has really attacked this problem with great passion to help out these investors. So, yes, I very much look forward to speaking with him, and we'll bring him on at 12:45 Eastern or as soon as he logs in to to the room. But for now, if you want to talk about the big up move that we have, we've still got a few minutes before he's scheduled to be on.
Sure. We'll take we'll do as fast as we can. We'll get through all the you just let me know when to stop. You know, you stop me. Let's see. With regard to the S&P, we had forecast the June 11th, reflected wave had forecast June 11th as a daily market bottom. Yesterday on your program, we said it was one day late, and that if they closed above 1327, that would be the stronger position and basic confirmation for a multi-day advance off of the bottom. And this is one of the values of having not only reflected wave, but knowing about the one day late, because they don't always give you the one day late. But when they do, and they complete the important price levels, which a few days prior I said I really want to see 1325 or lower get completed prior to us deciding to take any long positions based on this. And yesterday they did complete 1325 and lower. They closed above the important levels. Pretty much everything that you needed, you know, to have a, you know, a confirmatory position would be on. Also, yesterday in our webinar, we forecast, utilizing reflected wave, anybody could do it, that today would be that the market would have a multi-day advance off of yesterday's low into today. So into, today and beyond. So we've had a very good move up off this bottom. And as I mentioned yesterday as well, this is in spite of our bigger concern, you know, the longer-term concern about a bigger decline potential that still exists, the vulnerability on the downside. So we're going to I'll move on to another market here. But this is a beautiful advance, a very easy to hold kind of move. Only easy, of course, if you have the experience in doing that. It's always easy after the fact, but to hold on to it, to have open profits, is a lot harder to hold on to for most people than holding on to two times that in losses. And that's just because of the nature of people not wanting to be wrong with their positions. Being unwilling to take a loss would also obviously fall into that category. But so today's up move is big. There's actually, you'll see, since today is Friday and we're coming into the weekend here, how today's session handles the current level up here from 50, I know you have 52, 53, right in that whole area, is very important because of some natural levels that are due on Tuesday of next week. So we're going to talk about that as we get into it. We don't have the time right now because I want to zip through these markets pretty quick. And actually, I can make it pretty quick because we can zip from the S&P, which we'll move away from now, over to gold. Gold also is having a nice bounce as well today. Nothing new to add to that, but gold, as we talked about many weeks ago, put in a bottom on the week of May 14th. We had forecast that, as far as we believe, that bottom should not be broken for the remainder of the year.
Which bottom, so, David, is that on gold?
That's the May 14th. That's the week of, not the day, but the week of May 14th.
Okay.
That under normal conditions, that would mark a very powerful bottom. Now, when we say powerful, it could mean powerful, meaning the market really wants to rocket off of there, and it could mean powerful that it's just going to hold. And it means both of those. It just means that the market should stay above that level. And it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks have passed, and the market has not had a powerful move. It's had tradable moves, but it has not had a powerful move up. So we're still expecting further firming and hopefully a further advance from here to do further confirmation for that. This whole level that we're talking about, the level that they tested on the week of May 14th, this is a very important price level in the market. It was also a very important reflected wave weekly bottom that we had called for in the market.
anybody with reflected wave would know about that bottom. But in this particular case, because of other factors, there's multiple things that have come together there. So the market continues to react off that, but it's been very quiet, or roughly speaking, you know, on a weekly perspective. It has had nice tradable moves inside there, but it hasn't had anything really outstanding yet on the upside. So we're anxious and watching that. And we'll talk about that more as into next week. Let me think here if there's any other thing. Gold, nothing that fast. I'm trying to rip through it a little faster here.
Okay, James is standing by.
Okay, good. Well, James, I'm going to be done in 2 minutes here, so I want him to get on and give him all the time that's due him. The only other thing of importance, and it isn't that important, but we had forecast a couple of days ago for the crude oil market that the market would continue to advance. It would stay above, on daily closes, $84.76, and that it would advance into up to 87.27 to 87.29. Today, the market reached a high of 87.33, so they completed the 87.29 target. We did get a few text messages from people or emails that had taken advantage of the trade, which was either to buy to pull back. I mentioned yesterday on the program that since they did test the 84.76 and were above it, this thing was buying territory for the completion of this move, which it might have been a $700 move in the end, maybe a little more, depending on how you traded it. But the market has completed it. And so how they handle the 87.29 level on today will be important. And then we may have a secondary trade for crude oil and a forecast for it into Monday. And with that, I take a back seat to your new guest because I want to hear everything he has to say. So, Dwayne, it's all yours.
Okay, very good. David, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That may be the fastest recap in history. And
it is.
Once we finish talking with James, we can, by all means, go back and revisit any of those markets that you want to cover a little bit more.
Okay.
So let me scroll down through the list here, and let me find James. There he is. James, I'm going to open up your mic right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. James Katulis, we would like to welcome you to CFRN. We brought you on to a cheesy smattering of applause. How's that?
That's great.
We're real high-tech here. James, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to come in and chat with us and talk about this issue. We are commodity traders, futures traders. You are a broker who – I've been reading a lot of articles about you. You're the broker who had – you went to law school.
Not a broker.
No, I'm sorry. You went to law school – and became a hedge fund manager and had no plans to become an attorney, and yet here you are representing some 8,000 customers of MF Global?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Did I get that right?
Well, I mean, it's really more like 10,000 members of the coalition, but I've essentially been the de facto attorney for all customers since there's really only one other group out there doing any kind of customer advocacy. And now it looks like we've had another 20 to 25,000 victims at PFG, unfortunately.
You know, I wasn't sure how I should address you. Boy wonder of the MF Global nightmare, or the white...
Let me go for something
or the white knight. or should I just call you James?
James is fine.
Okay, and this is your website, the Commodity Customer Coalition. This is where folks can go to learn more about you, your organization, what you're doing. Maybe you can just kind of bring us up to speed on who you are, how you got involved, and what's going to happen next.
Well, I'm a rather young guy. I run a commodity trading fund here in Chicago. Last October, when MF Global went bankrupt in unprecedented fashion, essentially the futures industry froze like deer in the headlights, and no one really stepped up to protect customers from all the different parties who rushed into bankruptcy court to try to loot the bankruptcy estate, such as J.P. Morgan. I was in New York at the time of the bankruptcy and filed was preparing to file an emergency motion on behalf of our customers who are at MF Global, and the New York Times kind of picked that up, and before I knew it, I had about 1,000 people a day calling our office. My poor little sister said she felt like a grief counselor for a good couple months and was hearing phones ringing her sleep. I wound up meeting a guy named John Rowe, who's a broker here in Chicago and whose father's a congressman from Tennessee. And the two of us teamed up and in response to just a void in the industry, we formed the CCC as a nonprofit advocacy group to represent everybody and do our best to get everybody's money back. In the MF Global case, we did a very good job of doing that. The trustee's initial plan was to distribute about 60% of clients' assets right about now, by, you know, really kind of using the media as our friend to embarrass a lot of the white shoe law firms and people who try to make bankruptcy processes take as long as possible. We were able to get customers 72% of their money back before Christmas of last year, and they're now up to 80%. At least those in that were holding accounts in the U.S. Due to differences in the laws in Britain. Unfortunately, those customers are not faring nearly as well, but it's something that's pretty much outside of our control. But now customers are able to sell their claims to distressed debt buyers at between about 93 to 96 cents on the dollar for U.S. accounts, based in large part on our advocacy work. So, you know, well, I'm certainly not happy that we get to relive this process for another group of poor customers 8 months after MF Global. I'd like to think that at least the people at PFG are in good hands with us representing them.
Now, the difference between MF Global and PFG, correct me if I'm wrong, but one was a trade gone bad and the other was a man gone bad?
You know, in MF Global, that's kind of what's been put out there in the media, but I disagree. I think wholeheartedly fraud was committed in MF Global. It just was a sneakier, more disguised fraud. Our organization authored a brief describing 7 badges of fraud that we believe are readily apparent at MF Global. The trustee's report on the matter, I feel, strengthens our brief, and we think it's an absolute travesty that the principals there are not in jail and that their assets have not been frozen. And, you know, we'd urge the government to really step in and make some justice done. I mean, you know, here at PFG, one day after the uncovering of the fraud, you have assets frozen and the CFTC rushing to court. But MF Global, we're 8 months later. You know, the fraud is there, even though it's not as blatant as having a suicide note from the CEO. But it should be prosecuted as well.
What do you think the chances are that clients of PFG will see a return of their money?
Well, they're definitely going to get some of their money back. It's really hard to say how much at this point. There's a lot of analysis and discovery that needs to be done on the just what kind of assets are still there. From what I've heard from sources inside PFG, their early rough estimates are about 55 to 75% of customers' assets can be made whole based on the assets they have. But again, that's just an early estimate given the fact that you have a fraud here. We don't know exactly how deep it goes. We don't know exactly how many assets are left in Mr. Wassendorf's estate, or if there's other complicit parties that we could look to for additional recoveries.
Now, I received an email this morning from one of our partners and longtime listeners. He said that he thought he had really hedged himself well, he was a client of one of the largest, MF Global, and then also a client of one of the smallest, PFG. And he got bit on both ends. What can traders, what can investors do to protect themselves from this type of thing? And are there any red flags that we should be on the lookout for?
Problem is, it's really hard to do due diligence on fraud, right? If someone decides that they're going to commit a crime, it's a very hard thing to stop them. We as a society have really, in the last several years, devalued the deterrent effect, especially in the financial industry. I mean, it's just horrible that no one went to jail or was even indicted over all the fraud that occurred in 2008. Same thing here with MF Global. And, you know, if the people in charge aren't scared of the regulators and they aren't scared of going to jail, it's really hard to prevent fraud. In terms of red flags, if we want to take some hindsight here, you've got the fact that Corzine publicly said we're going to be, you know, Goldman 2 and turn ourselves into an investment bank and start taking principal risk with prop trading. I mean, that was all publicly disclosed and you know, put out there. But I think that the customers, both of MFG and of PFG, took a lot of comfort in the fact that in 200 years of commodity trading, no customer had ever lost a penny in a segregated account. And customers have put a lot of stock in those protections up until really this week. And the fact that those protections no longer seem safe is a horrible thing, not only for the futures industry, but really across the U.S. financial system. Because if say, in Corzine's case, if someone could take $1.6 billion out of customer accounts that are supposed to be far safer than a bank account, to cover risky trades, how do you say your 401k is safe? How do you say your IRA is safe? It's really hard to do that.
James, I have a question for you. This is David. You know, I always was under the impression, for maybe just bad reasons, maybe not clear, I wasn't maybe clear on it, but I was under the impression that there were protections of some kind, and you just mentioned some protections. I'm now pretty clear that there really are no protections. There's no insurance for these funds. There's nothing that stops people working for the company to go into segregated accounts and gamble with it or, you know, run off with it. As a matter of fact, it's just as unsafe as putting your money in, in a box somewhere and hoping that somebody doesn't pick it up, because there isn't any insurance that I'm aware of. I've heard of the SPIC, but what does that insurance really do for me?
Well,
I'm a customer, by the way, of MFG. I lost money with them as well. I'm not a client of yours, but I did lose. So,
sorry to hear that. So SIPC insurance is currently limited only to customers of on the security side of the business. So MF Global was only covered there for about 300 securities accounts. Commodity accounts did not have that insurance. And for 200 years, the public policy said that you don't need that insurance because as opposed to a bank or a broker where the house entities can fractionally reserve lend, and they could, say, take your bank deposit and then lend against it, you know, tenfold. Commodity accounts, by law, have to have in excess of 100% of deposits in an account segregated at all times. And those are actually very, very strong protections. However, the problem we've seen here in the last 8 months is that those protections have not been upheld. So in MF Global, October 27th, 4 days before they filed bankruptcy, the CME, which was the regulator for MF Global, came in and said, MF Global, you're not allowed to wire any money out of the segregated account unless you have our approval. And they did it anyway. And they're not in jail.
I don't understand that either. I don't understand why. Where is John Corzine right now?
The last I heard, he's in the Hamptons.
Okay. You know, if you or I or anyone else ran a company where we took $10,000 from somebody,
we would be either in jail or out on bail. Here's a guy that ran a company.
Assuming we don't donate $500,000 to Obama's reelection campaign.
But, yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, you know, you make a fine point there. But let's just say that we had done something like that. We would have been we would have had to post bail, you know, all that stuff. There's been nothing that has happened to him except having to go in front of a congressional hearing and say that he doesn't know. And since then, things have been great. And is it your impression? I'm just curious what you think. What do you think is going to happen to him?
I think a lot depends on this election cycle. You know, we as an organization are completely bipartisan. I mean, I voted for Obama last time. John Rose's dad is a Republican congressman, and our third board member is a lifelong Democrat. I mean, we could care less about you know, the partisan nature of this stuff. We just want to see some integrity restored to the financial system. And, you know, we've met with the Democratic leadership in D.C., and we've told them that this should really be something that you guys think about strategically as a campaign. I mean, Obama campaigned on bringing justice to Wall Street and, you know, cracking down on fraud and crime. And you know, there's an ad put out by one of the PACs, I think it's called, like, Justice for Sale, where it outlines, you know, a lot of things Obama's done. And, you know, as much as everybody wants to hate the PACs, they're right. I mean, you got a situation where just because a guy's a big contributor to the Democratic Party, there is no serious investigation or prosecution of him being done. And, you know, part of that is where I think we're an election year. Part of it is that, you know, Eric Holder's already been held in contempt of Congress for Fast and the Furious. But, you know, we look how fast...
I saw that movie.
Go ahead. We look how fast, you know, the CFTC and FBI have sprung into action in PFG when it's a Republican donor who's the one committing the crime. And, you know, I can't help but think that there's some political... Yeah. You know, reason for the difference in speed. I mean, granted, it's an easier case in PFG since you have a signed confession. You know, at least this guy had, you know, I don't know if you want to say an honor, but at least, you know, he tried to inflict some kind of punishment on him. I mean, Corzine is a complete sociopath. I mean, I've gotten up in his face in Congress, and I mean, you know, he stared me down with nothing but rage and contempt for me in his eyes. I mean, I didn't see a shred of remorse or... And you know, all Corzine cared about was his own ego. I mean, that's why, you know, he got $1.6 billion missing, because he wanted to keep those trades on at all costs. He had 2,800 employees out of work because of him. And he's scum and needs to go to jail.
Yeah, he does. He does. Let me ask you these questions. Maybe you know the answers. Maybe you don't. And nobody may know the answers. If I had moved money around into different bank accounts, if I had a company and started and it had customer funds and I started moving that money around, it's all very traceable, especially as you get into larger dollar amounts. It's been quite some time, and the FBI and other people that know how to trace money and to walk through the banking system would certainly have by now had some idea what happened to this money. Forget that he says he doesn't know, John. But certainly the investigation would now know. And yet, as far as I know, and I haven't heard and read everything, but we don't know, do we, what happened to the money?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
The trustee in the broker-dealer liquidation, James Giddens, published a 275-page report a little over a month ago. And he says specifically the money was not lost because they were investing it under Rule 1.25. It wasn't lost due to some kind of operational error. The money went out the door to meet margin calls on the house trades, and that's theft, okay? And, yeah, where the money is it J.P. Morgan, Bank of New York? Some of it went to the CME, and the CME is had reached a settlement with the trustee to return it, which Louis Free, who is a you know, acting as the trustee of the holding company case and as a shill for J.P. Morgan, has been trying to stall the release of that money to customers. But the trustee knows where the money is. He's given J.P. Morgan, I think they've got another 2 weeks or so, to return the money back. Or the trustee says it's going to file suit against J.P. Morgan.
Well, so, now, would that make John Corzine having told a lie in front of Congress, because he knows then that it went into margin calls? What would have stopped him from saying this money went into margin call?
I mean, I definitely believe that he lied in front of Congress. And in fact, I was sitting
behind. But to what end? To what end? What's wrong with saying it went into margin call? We didn't run the business right, and these things were, you know, margin called.
Well, because then he's admitting that he violated the law.
So these are
customer segregated accounts that he used to meet margin calls for MF Global's proprietary positions.
Oh, I get it. So he was using customer funds to make margin call to fulfill margin call requirements for proprietary trading of MF Global.
Yeah,
they messed up, and
that's essentially theft.
No, of course. That's what it is. Okay, so we do know where the money is. We do know what happened to it, and we do know that he must have known that they took a huge sum of their money from segregated accounts and used it to fulfill margin calls in their own trading that had gone awry in their own proprietary trading programs.
No,
that's right. So, and I can give you some more color on that if you want, but I mean, the facts are very clear that it was done intentionally.
Let's just differentiate here between margin call and margin requirements, right? This is Michael Wedley.
I mean, they had a margin call on their European sovereign debt positions after the firm's credit rating was downgraded, and basically on one side they were trying to liquidate their short-term cash equivalents. They sold about $1.3 billion in commercial paper to Goldman, and J.P. Morgan dragged its feet releasing the proceeds of those trades. So, the theory goes is that, on the other side they had a $200 million margin call in the MF Global UK unit in London, also to J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan said that they wouldn't release the proceeds from the commercial paper transactions unless MF Global met the $200 million margin call. So what happened is, on October 28th, MF Global provided a falsified segregated funds report to their regulator, the CME, that said that they had exactly $200 million in excess firm capital held in the customer segregated account. And, you know, that's couple ironies here is that the $200 million in excess happened to be the exact amount of the margin call. Yet on October 27th, they only had $100 million in excess. So this report that they supposedly, said was good enough to send to the regulators, assumed that they were actually growing their capital excess while a bank run was in progress. And that's just pretty much impossible, first of all. Second of all, during the course of that week, they adjusted the balance in their reported segregation account by $540 million with a manual override for which there was no supporting documentation whatsoever. I mean, us as a regulated entity, if we make an adjustment of like $20, we have to have supporting documentation for it. And they wired this $200 million in falsified, falsely reported excess to J.P. Morgan on the 28th. They did it without asking the CME's permission, and they did it at the same time that they were redirecting customer requests to get their funds back that were made for wire transfers to checks. So they were check-kiting and
every
those
rule
checks
on the
to
book.
Customers. Yeah, and these guys aren't in jail. I don't understand.
Yeah, that is funny. Remember the book?
It's a disgrace.
Do you remember
what
was the book a million years ago that was when we were all kids? You may be too young, James, but what was
Catch
the book?
Catch Me If You Can?
No. The guy that said, I can't think of the name of the title of the book, but it was a book of all the bank check kiting and everything else that you could do to make money. The Lazy Man Ways to Riches.
Oh,
Okay, and this is literally a booklet on everything illegal you can do. It's like these guys, it's like Corzine and his friends sat around smoking something, reading The Lazy Man's Ways to Riches, and they've done every one of the things in that book in this crime. And having said that, I just want to say, James, that we had a small amount of money in there as well,
and we've got probably 85% of it back, and could you lend me $50 along with the supporting documentation? Would that be possible? No. Okay. Really.
Yeah, I mean, we laugh, but I mean, this is disgraceful. Like, this is
no, America, it's terrible.
Right?
It's terrible.
I mean,
of course.
You know, so our country was founded on you know, the premise of protecting individual property rights. I mean, that was one of the most important, you know, tenets of our society. And we're in a stage now with when we've got all the technology to track this stuff.
Yes.
Exactly. Where we know exactly what happened, and essentially you could donate $500,000 to a president's reelection campaign and then go party in the Hamptons after, you know, $1.6 billion was fraudulently removed from your country.
This sounds strangely like the Mark Ritchie story. If, am I getting his name right, or whatever the guy was?
Mark Rich. Yeah.
Mark Rich, yeah. With which of the President Clinton
pardoned yeah.
him after, you know, the whole thing. So so it's good business to give money to presidential candidates that become president. That's a kind of a get-out-of-jail card.
He's continued to bundle money for Obama after this has happened. So Obama actually returned $70,000 in direct contributions that Corzine gave him, but he's kept all the bundled money, as far as I know.
How do you sleep at night, knowing all the stuff you know about this? Because it is so aggravating, and so obviously you're very passionate about it. What kind of drugs are you on? You go to bed.
Actually, I just fly so much and then spend so many hours working, I fall asleep. My head hits the pillow. But
all right, okay, that's a good answer. Just checking.
James, it's Bert from Daniels Trading.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, how are you? Hey, don't you think the CFTC has to take some responsibility? I mean, what's your position on that? I mean, they were supposed to be there to do the checks and balances. Didn't they fail on their end?
It's too early to tell if they have any liability here. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, my initial reaction is, you know, you let this thing go on for years. You don't pick up the phone once to call the banks. I mean, they did a spot audit back in January where they checked something like 75 different FCMs in conjunction with the NFA. And the release from that spot audit says, everything's fine, but by the way, we didn't actually verify the balances with the depositors. And I mean, I gotta say, like, heads need to roll at the CFTC. I mean, Gensler is a joke, and I guess I say that at great personal peril since I'm regulated by the CFTC. But I mean, the agency's a disgrace under him.
I'm with you. You know, right now, in the end, what if you're a PFG client? What should they do? I mean, what should be their first order of business, you think?
You know, I think the first order is probably go to our website, commoditycustomercoalition.org, and in the top right-hand corner, they could sign up to be a part of our newsletter. You know, right now, there's still a lot of facts that have to come out to see how this case is going to play out. But, I filed my pro hoc vice for admittance into the bankruptcy bar for this case today. So, I mean, I will be representing individuals pro bono in the case and doing whatever I can to help get their money back. And, you know, us as an organization, I think, do a pretty good job of disseminating very reliable information. And that's the best way to keep informed.
Okay.
Well, I have to tell you, if myself or on behalf of people forget our situation, because we had a very small amount there, but I would feel very comfortable from what you've said. You sound like somebody that I would want on my side going after this guy, because and collecting the money, not even going after the guy, but getting the money back for investors, which would go a long way to at least in my particular case helping me believe that it's okay to have a sizable amount of money in a brokerage, which, to be honest with you right now, I'm not comfortable with. And obviously, I have good reason to not be. I don't want to frighten people, but it has frightened me that something like this can happen, and you really don't know if there's going to be a person like you out there that's going to help get the money back. You don't know if the government's just going to say, well, you know, because this administration has a view, you know, sort of looks badly upon people who are trying to get ahead, or people who are successful
that sort of thing. And I almost could very comfortably say to myself, well, they're not going to be helping me. The government's not going to come in and help me get that money back because it wasn't insured, and I'm screwed. You know, but there's people like you out there that are, you know, doing all the things, the gumshoe effort, all the way up to taking the getting the money back, which is very satisfying to hear. It would make me feel good if I was one of the people out there being on your list of people that you're fighting for.
Thank you. But yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, it's tough. I mean, we have a handful of volunteers, and I mean, we just went through the equivalent of like a white collar war, which isn't even done yet with MF Global, and you know, this was the last thing you know, we were either looking or hoping to happen. Yeah.
What were you doing right before this happened? What were you doing with your life before this happened?
So, opening a New York office and launching a securities trading arm of the firm. So, I mean, not like I was just sitting idle on the beach, you know. So.
I wasn't implying that, but I was just curious what you were doing as this came about, because you had something you were doing with your life, and this has obviously become the main focus and requires enormous research, and, you know, this has to be very tiring.
The name of your company, James, is Typhoon Capital, is that correct?
Typhon Capital, yeah, Typhon. Just 1-0.
That's how I met James. He came into the office one day, and I was introducing some business to him and into his fund, because he does run a successful CTA. He's got some good product with good returns, and that's how we kind of got together, along with some other things. And if people are interested on the CTA side and the managed product side, certainly one to look at in his products. So
past performance is not necessarily indicative of future retirement.
Yeah, right. I forgot.
And
I am a lawyer.
I want to add to this, James. You may not look as young as you look in this picture by the time you meet some of these people, because this stuff can age you. You look pretty good in this picture, James. You know, you might want to put that one on the wall somewhere. Just remember how when I look like this, honey?
Before and after. Yeah, no, it's been a long year, man. The hair is graying.
Okay, well, it's a good picture, though.
Now, James, on the surface, it looks like these two issues are very different, MF Global versus PFG. I mean, I was astounded by the high-tech nature of the PFG scheme, and that was to get in the car, drive across the state line, and open a post office box?
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be more to it than that, right? Or is there?
I mean, the NFA told me that that this box had apparently been the official address on file for U.S. Bank for 10-some years, and that somehow that Russ got control of it. I don't know if that's still their position. They gave me that a couple days ago. But, I mean, it's...
Well, I've got this fake statement up on the screen right here. There's the P.O. box, the amount... $218 million, that number written in by hand and signed by, who is this document signed by? Do you know offhand?
You know, I only have the first page of the scan, so if you...
Okay, the second page over here is an actual bank statement.
I've got the bank statement where it's got $218 million,
right.
You know, typed on it. I don't have the confirmation one.
But what we're to understand is that this document is fake, correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
This is not an actual statement generated by U.S. Bank, but something done on a computer with Photoshop or whatever.
I don't know exactly how it was generated.
Okay.
I mean, there was, you know, so the NFA guys at least implied that perhaps it was done at U.S. Bank, but I don't know.
Oh, really?
It's speculation at this point.
Okay.
But
the guys who I talked to
have seen the original document say it looks pretty perfect.
It does.
Better than a birth certificate we're all familiar with.
Oh, I'm not going there.
I don't want to go there either.
Now, a couple questions from the studio audience. Bruce wanted me to ask you about a couple of names. I'm not familiar with these names. He said, please ask James about Edith O'Brien and Christine Sierwinski.
Yeah, so Edith was the assistant treasurer at MF Global, who was kind of in the heart of the whole, you know, final days, and basically at the CFO's request, which Sierwinski was one of the CFOs. There were two different CEOs, her and Henry Steenkamp.
Okay.
And Sierwinski was actually in the process of stepping down from MF Global and was on a ballroom dancing retreat. I think the bankruptcy happened. You can't make this stuff up.
But, you can't make this stuff up.
But Edith is basically who I think Corzine tried to make as the fall girl in this whole thing. She's, you know, been in the business 20 plus years, has a, you know, excellent reputation, and you know, it's our position as an organization that Edith should be given immunity by the DOJ, as I have personal knowledge that she has some pretty significant evidence against the C-suite over there.
So, Edith, you recommend immunity. What about Sierwinski?
You know, Sierwinski, I'm not sure exactly how involved she was in this. Like, she was literally on her way out the door. You know, from what I've seen, I think that Corzine and Henry Steenkamp, the other CFO, should be if I was running the criminal investigation, that's who I'd be looking at.
Now, based on one of the interviews I saw with you, or an article I read, I think you've got a bone to pick here with J.P. Morgan as well, correct?
Yeah, so J.P. Morgan is the bank that was the very involved in this. They were the largest lender to MF Global. They were the custodian of a lot of the customer funds. They were the clearing and settling agent for MF Global's proprietary trading. They were able to kind of game the U.K. bankruptcy process to buy the sovereign debt positions out of bankruptcy with essentially no oversight, and then flip them to Soros almost immediately for about a six-handle profit on that. They were also able to buy MF Global's London Metals Exchange stock out of the U.K. bankruptcy, which LMAE is in the process of being sold, for which J.P. Morgan would get a huge profit on that stock. But anyway, they're the ones who received several hundred million dollars in customer funds for payment of margin calls. And when I started voicing all the facts about JPM and the media, they actually took the stance of closing all of my personal hedge fund, my personal bank accounts, my hedge fund bank account, the CCC's bank account. They closed my personal credit card, and they did so in very questionable fashion. And I'm actually have an attorney preparing some litigation against them for their various bullying techniques.
Wow. So they really came after you personally over this?
Yeah. From the executive offices, all these notices came out.
Hmm.
So
there's more to
class
this.
Acts over there, but you know.
No, I'm telling you, I was going to invite you to lunch, but I don't want to be seen with you. I'm not sure that would be good for me.
That might be safe, but you know, I do take at least a little comfort of the fact that back in March I wrote an open letter to Jamie Dimon that you could look at on Zero Hedge. You know, kind of relating my background in Greek classics and hubris to the man, and you know, his unbridled arrogance, and mm-hmm. I predicted that I don't know when, but something bad is going to happen to J.P. Morgan, and here we have the whale trade, as we heard about in full glory in today's conference call. So couldn't happen mm-hmm. to a nicer guy, Jamie.
Well, I'll tell you something. This is such an interesting story that just to finish off the final graying of your hair, you could write a book at the end of all this, and I'm sure you would have quite a number of readers that would want to know all these details and how it all played out, because this is really crime at the highest levels on some level. It's way up there.
It really is, and it's just it makes our country look so bad that this guy could be partying in the Hamptons after a $1.6 billion fraud. I mean, it's an utter disgrace, and really all Americans should be ashamed that the government that we've elected is not doing more to protect us. Because let's remember, I mean, MF Global's customers were a lot of farmers, ranchers, Coca-Cola, ConocoPhillips, I mean, major American corporations, retirees, mm-hmm. and all these people had money just outright stolen from them to cover a sociopath's incredibly risky trades, and nothing is being done about it, and it's a travesty.
Well, you've done a great job of explaining. I, for one, much, much clearer now understand what happened from your explanation, and I really appreciate that.
At this point, James, if a person was a client at PFG Best, is there any action they should be taking? Is it a wait-and-see approach? What should
do? Right now, they should just sign up for our newsletter on commoditycustomercoalition.org. And, we've got all the lawyers moving, and, we'll be – our co-founder, John Rowe, is going to be speaking or testifying before the Senate Banking Committee about it in a couple weeks. We're on this. We're doing whatever we can, for customers. But, there's nothing that they could individually do on their own right now.
So at your website, commoditycustomercoalition.org, where do folks sign up for the newsletter?
It's in the top right-hand corner.
Under resources?
Let me pull it up.
Customer action.
It's right under the search box that says receive CCC updates. And you could just click a link, sign up to receive CCC updates.
Okay.
And they just put in their email and hit subscribe, and they'll be on the list.
Gotcha. Okay, guys. All right. As this progresses, we'd like to invite you to come back and talk with us again. And keep us kind of up to speed on this and up to date. Does David, Bert, anyone else have any additional questions for James?
I'm just impressed with his – I just want to say I'm impressed with how knowledgeable he is. And if something really bad happens, I'll bail you out. I'll get you out and you can continue going if something really weird happens to you along the way. Okay.
Well, the running joke in my family is, if I slip in the shower or get hit by a bus or something, it was J.P. Morgan's fault. So.
Okay, well, I'll make a note of that right here.
Stay away from any grassy knolls, okay?
Yeah. No, but you are the guy to do this. I mean, I can tell in your tone and in your the detail that you are behind this, you're scary. I mean.
Thank you, I guess.
Yeah. This is going to be if I was on the wrong side of the law, I would not want you chasing me. So that means that's a good thing for the people like myself and others that have been through this with them. So,
and the next time we have you on the show, James, perhaps we can talk a little bit about J.P. Morgan's manipulation of the silver market.
That's something I've heard a whole ton about, but I don't have enough evidence there to speak on that on record, but feel free to send me anything you got, because it's a very interesting story, but it's hard for me to kind of know definitively what the reality is there.
We'll all sleep better knowing you're on the case.
Yeah,
thanks.
Thanks so much for coming on the show today, folks. Go visit James at his site. That is commoditycustomercoalition.org. This guy is all over the net, CNBC, Fortune, wherever you turn, you're going to see James. You heard him here on the show. If you have any questions, feel free to email them into the program. I'll pass them along to James, and next week I'll provide answers with you as James is able to email them over to me. And again, an open invitation, as soon as you have more information, to come back on the show and share with us again.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, James.
Bye.
Well, there you are.
Well, David, now we know the rest of the story, as
we
they
do.
Say.
Great information.
Yeah.
Very good information. We've talked several times on this program, sort of musing, why don't we know what happened to $1.6 billion? It's so easy to move. And now we have such a clear picture that the thing that really happened wasn't that they were trading with that money. They were utilizing that money for margin calls for bad trades they had already been in their own proprietary accounts. And that makes it, clear now to see why people would say things like, well, they took customer money and they traded with it, because that just sort of blends in, you know, to them using it as margin. Margin's a little bit more of a sophisticated concept, but that's what happened to it. And so it's sitting over at J.P. Morgan, and J.P. Morgan is supposed to refund the remainder of it. And, you know, in the beginning, I thought there was all these other agencies that were going to come in to help pay the money back. In reality, the money that we've all been paid back, and many of your listeners here are people who have had this, maybe they'll sign up with James, who've had money that were taken in this. Well, in the end, all that money wasn't, you know, the 85% that all of us have gotten back didn't come from some outside benefactor. It came from J.P. Morgan. It came from where it went. And they're supposed to give the remainder of it, if I understand this correctly, back. And so everybody will have been made whole, which would be not only one of the bigger brokerage scandals of all times, but one of the biggest undoing of a brokerage scandal of all time. I mean, how often does everybody get paid back everything? You know, it's $1 out of 100 normally that you get back when things blow up like this. When the PFGs and the, you know, MF Globals happen, you know, people just expect, I'm going to get 50 cents on the dollar, I'm going to get 1 cent on the dollar, whatever. Well, here's something that's still underway where people, most of us, have gotten 85 or more percentage back of our money, and in the end, we may end up with all of it. The only downside, obviously, is that if somehow, I mean, you know, political graft and corruption has been around since day one. If you give the upcoming guy that becomes president a lot of money, it's becoming very clear that you have a shield of protection around you, because anybody that would have been involved in something like this at this size of money would have been, he would have been in jail, he would have been out on huge bail, that sort of thing. But of all the people who this has really recently happened to, the Bernie Madoff and the other guy, I forgot his name, they're all in jail, but this guy isn't yet. And he hasn't even been in front of a judge, from what I understand. So he's, like he said, he's out partying in the Hamptons. So,
I mean, when you go down to the store to get milk, and the people there in the Hamptons, although it's a very private place, and, you know, they know who you are, uh-huh, and they know what you've done. How do you do that? Or maybe he doesn't go down to the store for milk. Maybe he sends the butler or the chauffeur.
No, because they've all done something. I don't know. Maybe the Hamptons is just filled with...
They're all there on ill-gotten gains. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want... That's a President Obama statement. That's any of these rich people, they're all evil, et cetera. You know, it's not prosperity, it's theft, you know, in every case. And we know that there's... You know, I know many, many people who've earned very honest livings and have done very well with their manufacturing company, with their trading, with their whatever, and they've earned it the way you normally earn it, through hard work, and sometimes luck comes along and gets into play. There's always going to be people who, in any industry, that do, I mean, it has nothing to do with the industry, it's just people. There are people can be corrupt, and then there's other people who enjoy living a non-corrupt life and want to be able to go to sleep at night and say, what I have because I earned it fair and square, and, you know, I can sleep well, and they'd like to live that kind of life. And I think most people are that way. The world is not filled with, purely with criminals. I mean, we have wonderful people, wonderful giving people in America, hardworking. Some of them are very well-to-do. Some of them are middle class. Most people are not, you know, everyone has a price, I suppose, but not everybody's interested in putting themselves in a position to be tempted by that price, and that's the difference. They just want to live a decent life and be comfortable. And so that's how I think most of this is. I mean, the administration views things differently, but it is very, very bad, I think, that people can donate money to the president, and if he becomes president, then you have some kind of special protection from the Attorney General and from the highest law office in the land. They're going to kind of leave you alone, or they're going to pardon you or whatever. That's just, you know, ugly. And in many cases, the money you paid the president with are ill-gotten gains as well. So, and the president doesn't care where that money came from. He says, hey, you know, thanks very much, and we'll take care of you. That's just classic, you know, political corruption. And it's
Bert, isn't that how it's always been done in Chicago? Bert?
Bert doesn't want to say anything bad about Chicago.
I'm sorry. I put him on the spot like that. He's checking in with compliance right now to see if he can actually...
He can answer.
He can answer.
He's got
question.
Compliance on the phone before he says anything. That's funny.
There was a great TV show that got canceled. I think it only lasted one season. About that, the corruption in Chicago between... They have their what are called aldermen.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like... It's sort of the equivalent... In other cities of maybe a city councilman, except they wield tremendous power in Chicago. Bert, are you there? I know you can talk about that. I mean, we could Wikipedia this thing. We don't need compliance. Yeah, Alderman, but I'm trying to think of the name of that show. Somebody will type it into the chat box here. That was a really good show, and it got canceled, and I was very surprised. Maybe it was too close to the truth and made people nervous. Bruce comments, they did get Blago, though.
They did get Blago in Chicago. They did. He didn't donate to the president, and that's what happens.
And his,
gotta donate
And his
to the
wife
president.
Ended up on a reality show called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. That was an odd show. It was oddly I watched it. It was oddly interesting. They put these people like out on a deserted island and put them through all kinds of horrendous things, eating cockroaches and until they couldn't take it anymore. And then they would scream, I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. And she was really a strong woman. She stuck it out right to almost the very end. She might have even won the thing. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, Blago himself was interesting to watch and listen to him talk because he was almost like a cartoon character filled with energy and, you know, almost like the charisma of the mentally ill, if you know what I mean.
And he's got the same barber as Trump. So,
what's that?
And he and Trump share the same barber, apparently.
Oh, yes, yeah. So yeah, they have all the, you know, a lot of times these people have a lot of charisma, and they somehow they know how to connect with their audience. I mean, he was voted into office, but you know, this goes back to that thing even in trading where you're trying to get an edge on your edge. And I know he was in Chicago where that's what they do all the time, but he already had a great position that he could work from and could, you know, really work his hand. You know, he was mayor. What was he mayor or what was he?
No, he was
mayor.
The governor.
Governor, I mean, he had a great position there, and he could have worked that, but he wanted to get an edge on his edge, and he wanted to, you know, get something that wasn't his to get, and, you know, it's, like you said, it's political, and it's classic Chicago.
According to Bill, in the chat room, Blago's wife is the daughter of a Chicago alderman, and her father and Blago did not get along. That's why he's in jail. I told you, those aldermen, they got the power, man. Put the governor away.
Yeah,
Chicago Code. That was the name of the TV show, Chicago Code. It's on Netflix now, so for those of you who didn't see it, there's only one season, and so you could like have a Saturday marathon and get right through the whole season if you wanted to. It's really a good show. I was so surprised they canceled that.
Huh. There you are. Well, Dwayne, what would you like to do?
If there are any other markets you want to take a look at or anything you want to cover, we can.
Well, first of all, I just want to say again, this was a great guest to have on because this is a contemporary event right now that's happening. This is a guy that's right in the middle of this contemporary event that's happening. This isn't the past, so to speak. It's current. So this was a really good guy to have on. That was really good. I really got a lot out of that.
And he really
myself.
Was called the boy wonder of the MF Global Nightmare by the folks at CNN Money and Fortune.
Yeah, well, listen, the guy's very sharp. He knows what
he
knows.
Is.
And he's on the game and he means business. And that's why I said, you know, he's scary. He's not fooling around. He wants to get in there, and he knows the ins and outs of this. And
we didn't get into this. He got into the markets early. For those of you that missed that part, he runs a hedge fund. Is that correct, mm-hmm. Bert? Correct terminology? Mm-hmm. As a tech-savvy kid from Sunrise, Florida, he landed an internship with a telecom startup after winning a contest designing his school's website. He learned about trading from the company's CFO, bought his first car at 16 using capital gains he earned from betting on technology stocks. At 17, he interned for Smith Barney, writing analytical software that assessed the performance of brokers, and he founded Typhon after graduating from law school. Typhon's business model is predicated on the fact that traders are by nature disorganized. Cotula says, I have lots of skills, but I think like a programmer. I built all our back office, legal, and accounting systems and package our products. The business pretty much runs itself.
Wow, very interesting.
But at his core, Cotula is a legal cynic, which appears to be just what MF Global's customers need.
Yeah, no, I was impressed by that. Okay, so
Bert, thanks to you, although you're oddly absent, we thank you for making that interview possible, for making the connection there.
That's
and,
great.
And we're just sad you couldn't hang around to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we
well,
love
Bert
you.
He doesn't need the credit. He's a busy man with big and important clients.
Yeah.
So, all right, so let's see. We'll review real quick. I'll take a quick look at everything. We just basically we went over the S&P, the daily bottom. We've had the advance we talked about yesterday, and we're underway. This market, by the way, the S&P is testing. There's two levels of importance for us today. They're very close together. One is at the 49.50 level, and then one matches your level at the 52.53. These, it looks almost like a cluster or a zone, but they're actually two separate levels. Mm-hmm. They're not the same. And so the market is very quietly testing and reacting off the 49.50, and with the daily push underway, under normal conditions, I would expect a multi-day move, even if the move goes sideways after completing some targets on the upside. The fact is the bottom that was due on June 11th, June 12th, should hold for some time. Now, having said that, I do want to remind you that we do have something for Tuesday of next week, which would that if Monday, if we're still in a bullish, if the bullish component, which it should be, is still in play, then we should have something interesting on Monday. And without going into all the detail right now, you can sign up for Messenger Pro, where we'll put it out first.
A couple of people have mentioned that you keep saying June, and you mean to be saying July.
I do, and I'm very sorry about that.
In fact, somebody said that your the Messenger Pro this morning was saying June when it should have been saying July.
That just means that I'm even more sorry about saying that. No, there's something, maybe something really good happened in June, and I'm just reliving it. I don't know why I've had trouble moving into July.
Okay.
Are we in July now? Can somebody clarify that for me?
Yes.
Is that where we are? All right. So with regard to the S&P, the way that they handle this level, let's just say from 50 to 53, forget breaking it into the two levels of 49.50 and then 52.53. Let's just say from 50 to 53. That whole level is going to be very important with regard to this upcoming potential roadmap. So this will be a very easy, it won't be huge, but it'll be a very easy trade, similar to like what the crude was, which was kind of roadmappy, the thing we did the other day with crude popping up today to complete that. It'll be something like that in the S&P, and it'll be big enough to, give you a very nice gain. So I'm going to save it for Monday. Messenger Pro customers will get this first, of course, if the market confirms. But I like everything that they've done, the pullback, the bottom from reflected wave, the bounce, the running to these numbers. This is all what we would all call normal behavior right now. And normal is good. It doesn't mean we have to deal with too much nuance. and into Monday, then it would be very important for us. And we'll see how it handles it. Our bigger picture, of course, stays the same, like I talked about, where we're somewhat concerned about the vulnerability of the market and the bigger picture on the downside. And so we'll wait. And by the way, with regard even to that, I do want to say that the month of July, the month that we're in right now, a close above 1306 on this month will be important. How they handle 1306 will be important. It's not that we're forecasting they're going to touch it, but the whole business of how the market handles 1306 is important for a number of reasons. We won't go into all of them, but technically that's a very important level for the market during this time frame. So we'll watch how that plays out. And then we did cover gold. We don't have a lot to add to it, but gold's had a nice rally today. So that's beautiful. The interest rates are down to about 3.5% from what I understand. I don't know if you can walk into a bank and get a home loan for 3.5% or not, but you can get pretty close to that. And so you might want to check that out. That's just about as low as I'm thinking you're going to see interest rates. I mean, that is really getting down. I mean, that is some seriously low interest on a 30-year loan for your house. And remember, if you are in a home that has is upside down, and you know you have many options, you don't have to. The worst option for you and for the bank is to walk away, and that's where the bank has to go through a process called foreclosure, and that's where they take the house back as the equity for the loan. That was the protection for them for the loan. And they will take a loss on that. It's more expensive for them. And for you doing that, you would trash your credit for 7 years. It effectively looks like a bankruptcy. On the other hand, if you do what is sort of more like a gentleman's deal with the bank where you short sale your house, that will still hurt your credit for 3 years. But 3 years is a whole lot less than seven, a whole lot less. And the bank and you have made an agreement, and nobody's mad at you. Nobody's looking to chase you. Nobody's, you know, it's much cleaner if you do that. That's where you agree with the bank to sell your house at a certain price below the amount that is owed on it. And so the banks understand that this is the position, and that, you know, they'll make a deal with you to do that, and plenty of houses sell that way. So you could do that, and you have many options. I'm not a real estate attorney, but I do play one on TV. You can get a real estate attorney. You can go and have a consultation with one for free and get some good questions answered, find out where you stand in this. And home prices are low enough now where it might be worthwhile for you to do that. You know, you have to judge your own situation. But if you have questions about that, I would like you to go and get yourself some competent legal advice, because the markets are not going to stay in this position forever, the position of super low interest rate and super low home prices. So check out what's going on in homes in your neighborhood. Check out the new building. Check out, get yourself an attorney, get a free consultation, and see if you can work through and get the understanding of what your options are. And you'll feel much better about it, and you may be able to make some good moves if this is a problem, if that happens to be a problem for you. With 3.5% interest rates, it's really a powerful incentive.
Watzendorf was just arrested, and he'll appear in court at 4 p.m. Central today.
Oh. All right. Well, there you are.
So apparently he was in the hospital from the suicide attempt, so I guess he's recovered to the point where they could arrest him, and he will be in court today.
You know, I'm thinking, I've seen enough of the, you know, bad drug commercials on TV that stealing money from a brokerage is a side effect of, could be one of the potential side effects of the bad drugs that people take. You know, as you know, how they list off the whole potential,
right.
This isn't going over very well, is it? The whole list of potential bad things that can happen on the drugs.
I know exactly.
One of them is you may, okay, never mind. That would be his defense in court.
I mean, the list of stuff that could happen to you is usually far worse than whatever it was you were taking the drug for to start with.
That's correct. And then he could come in and say, I was on Pradaxol or whatever like that. And one of the things is it could make you disoriented and think that large sums of money that weren't yours are suddenly yours or something.
What you're saying is he could end up making money off this deal.
he could actually help somebody somehow. But that would be, if I was his attorney, I might be saying, now let's, what are you on right now, Ted? What are you taking? Because, you know, really, what he did looks like an insane man. It looks like somebody snapped. And that it looks enough like that when you include the suicide attempt that, I mean, his defense probably is going to review, at least review, the idea of saying, this is a bad drug reaction. This is a combination of drugs. It did something to him. We have thousands of ancillary cases here where things like this have happened. And, you know, and that's going to mitigate quite a bit of this. That would be something that I wouldn't be surprised to see just because of the nature of the suicide and the taking of the money and then trying to kill yourself. Why not kill yourself before you take the money? Why are you killing yourself after you've taken it? Who knows what he was doing, but it looks wacky enough that it might fit into that.
Yeah. Well, I think the question here is no one knows where that money is. Unlike MF Global, where they know where the money is, this money, this $200 million, nobody knows where it is, really.
Oh, that adds some flavor to this, doesn't it?
I mean, he may have already spent it. You know, maybe he stole it, blew it, had a big weekend in Vegas.
That's a real big weekend in Vegas.
That was like a four-day weekend.
yeah, that's a four-day weekend in Vegas.
And then he came home very depressed, as a lot of people do. And, mm-hmm. I mean, because like, if you still had the money, you could just, like, I don't know, try to, you know, put it back in that P.O. box in Iowa. Just go shove it in there and just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking the money's gone. But no one
yeah,
knows
an interesting
where it went and how it got spent. And, yeah. So that will come out, I guess, you know, in the investigation. Eventually we will know what happened.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll tell you what.
On June 5th, employees received an invitation to Wassendorf's wedding to his fiancée, Nancy Palladino, planned for August 4th, according to an email obtained by CNBC. But public records in Clark County, Nevada, show Wassendorf and Palladino were married in Las Vegas 3 weeks later on June 30th. 3 days after the wedding, Wassendorf signed over power of attorney to his son, Russell Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, Bruce, well, thanks for sharing that. And Richard has a question for you. David has a June... and a close above 130607 as important. Do you also have August 6th to 10th as an important time period in the ES?
Let me take a quick look at that. I don't normally go out that far. I mean, in terms of, is he asking on a daily basis? Is that what he's saying?
He's just asking if August 6th to 10th is, shows up as
anything
important.
Oh, that sounds like a week.
Yeah.
No, I don't, but I will do something that I don't normally do, and I will tell you right now that the week of August 13th, which may be the week of August 13th is... No, that wouldn't include the week of the 6th. The week of August 13th is important in my work.
Okay.
So I hope that's, you know...
He's one of your guys. He can call you and talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of your guys.
Okay. Well, yeah, he's welcome to call. I can just see the I'm still on the thing with the guy with the medical, the drugs, you know, stop taking Boniva and tell your doctor immediately if the sudden desire to take millions of dollars,
$200 million.
Yeah, occurs to you.
If you embezzle $200 million, you may qualify for a class action lawsuit.
Right.
Call 1-800.
Right. Okay, so let's quickly go over the rest of them here. See if there's anything else of importance for today. But thanks for the question. I don't mind answering at all questions about future cycles and turning points and things like that. So you're welcome to ask them. And if it is something that has to do with reflected wave or anything like that, you're welcome to call if you've come to the seminar.
Yeah, he said he will. He's one of your guys.
Okay, great. I'd like to talk with him. Let's see. The only other thing that I can think of importance today, we talked about... the crude, they've already moved up, and they're probably going to be moving up higher here, but they're sitting right at the number right now. For I hope I'd like to know that somebody took that trade. We didn't. We just didn't get into it for whatever reason, but it'd be nice if somebody got a piece of that. It wasn't real big, but it was worth taking. And let's see if there's anything else here. Tesla today. Now, you know, I just want to say this is TSLA. This is the stock we talk about so many times. I've mentioned for the last couple of weeks that last week, the week of July 2nd, was an important weekly bottom. Weekly is a pretty good time frame, pretty sizable, and that we would expect a multi-week advance off of that. And if you take a look at Tesla today, in the last 2 days, Tesla has gone from $30.80 all the way up to $34.18, so $4 gain, and it's big on the charts. I mean, this is a decent size percentage move for the stock. Nice move up. So we'll continue to take a look at this. This is another example of just merely turning points, being able to call the change in polarity for the energy and that propels the market. It's energy that propels the market. That's what it really is in the end. The buying and selling of stocks is energy. It's people responding and doing something, but what they're doing isn't as cardinal as the fact that they are doing something, that energy is being expended. And the buying and selling in volume, in, you know, one or the other, in combinations, et cetera. Well, in particular, this is a stock that had been going down after the, remember the date, the June 22nd date for when they released their car, June 21st, whatever it was, and the market would normally run up into that date and then come down. And after having done so, it put in a weekly bottom, turning point bottom, and that sent the prices higher here. And this is one of those examples that we talked about yesterday. I just want to mention this again because it's very important for you, everybody, myself and everybody, to understand that you may want to do very well on the market, but to do very well on the market means you have to be in the market and stay with a position while the market is handing you, trying to pay you, trying to give you the gift of having been in the position. So that skill, you know, a lot of people, including myself, have and continue to get out far too early in positions. In spite of whatever we know, we still end up getting out too early, even with the aggressive positions. And I'm really, I've improved, but I have not improved to the point where I can say that I'm not subject to that at all. Certainly, I am. And I just want to say that when you see a move like what Tesla has done on the weekly chart, and it's a big explosive move up, how much of that can you ask yourself, how much of that could you have stayed in for? Would you have been in for, you know, obviously it depends on the kind of trader and all that stuff, but do you not want to be in for these bigger moves? And these bigger moves occur time and time again. When they hand them to you, are you going to be in for them? And so it's a question you should ask yourself, because you should, you can and should come up with a way to remain in a position, at least with your aggressive remaining contracts, shares, and be able to take some more of it out, even if that more isn't something that you forecast or anything like that. I, for a long time, have been under the mindset that I'm going to trade to what I know. You know, if I forecast from one level to the next and this is where it's going, I trade to that level. But more and more in the last year, I've been enamored with the idea of, yes, trade to where you know, but continue to hold if you can. If you can even trade to what you know, then continue to hold, because quite often the move will be substantially larger. The crude oil call for the big crash in May went dramatically further, almost double of what we forecast, and the forecast was sizable. So that's a good example of being able to leave some small, the smallest part of your position on, but be in for and let the market give you the gifts. And can you do that? And you should do that. You should be able to allow them to give you the gifts, because at some point you're going to be in a number of trades in your career where you've taken, you know, you've traded to the levels, you've done what you think you're supposed to do, but the market really continues and really puts it on. And those are the times where you can really stack up and get way ahead of your account where it was before. So something for you to consider. Would you, are you capable? Not capable of holding on to losing positions. Any idiot can do that. We all know that. But are you capable of holding onto the winning position when it's beyond your target and just running? Can you do that? I think that's a skill all of us need to, aspire to, continue to work on. And I do. So Tesla is doing this. It's running very nicely, and we'll have some things on the stock. I think the stock is going places, and I think it's also pretty tradable. Facebook continues to just move very quietly. It has interesting qualities, but it's not as tradable as the Tesla stock is right now. And then, let's see, anything else? One other thing I'd like to say about Tesla, which just specific to this stock alone, which is that Monday, July 16th, is the on-time date for a top in the stock. So we want to watch that date carefully. If the stock is able to make a legitimate breakout on the way up here, which it very well may because it has a weekly bottom that it's coming up from, we want to be careful utilizing that top as a short entry if a breakout occurs. It'll still be a top. It'll still pull back, but it's not the same quality of trade. So we're going to watch this into Monday, but keep in mind the July 16th. Did I say July? I said July, right? Not June, because I have a habit of saying June.
Okay.
From what people say. Okay. And then finally, I think we were talking about soybeans, and you still may want to consider soybeans as this is the end of the week. This is Friday, and I'd like to wish everybody a wonderful weekend. But soybeans has a range from $16.70 up to, I'm sorry about the numbers here, but up to $17.02, so about a 32-cent range. I know that's pretty big because each one of these cents is worth $50. So, 32 of those is $1,600. However, this is a very important period in the market on the way up, and these are very important price levels for this market on the way up. If you take a look at the chart, this isn't a typical price level that you might get by looking back in previous price movement. These are levels that are the kind of levels that sometimes you have to look to this because you have no previous price movement to go to. But these are levels that are related internally to the market itself. So the fact is that normally, and I've said this for years on the radio since day one, important turning points occur at important prices. So we have an important weekly turning point top that's due now, and we've now touched into that zone of prices from 1670 to 1702. So this is a time to consider if you like the soybean market, want to trade in it, think this is something that might work for you. This would be an interesting position for you to consider options or something like that. You can call Birch Lichter from Daniels Trading. That's his whole name, Birch Lichter from Daniels Trading. And he'll tell you about options and how you might utilize them in a trade with this. And over the weekend, I'm going to double check this stock or this market and see if we can come up with something in the form of a complete trade. Not just that this is a top, but that here's some levels that we can trade to, et cetera. And so I think, Dwayne, for today, that might just do the whole darn shooting match. So,
okay.
What do you think of them there, apples?
Sounds good. Bert's number, for anyone who needs it, is 866-928-3310.
Well, there you are.
All right.
And so, Dwayne, I'd like to wish you and everyone else a really comfortable, great weekend. This weekend, and I'm looking forward to coming back next week. This was a great guest you had on as well. I really enjoyed his insights into the MF Global. That was a frustration for me for a long time, is trying to understand what really was going on with that, and that really clarified it for me. So,
good. Thanks for being a part of it, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Very good. See you guys then. Have a great weekend.
All right, Dave.
Thanks again.
Guys, that's going to do it for us as well. as the man said, it is the weekend, so be sure to spend quality time with your family. Of course, we'll see you all in church on Sunday. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.